Welcome to Ask the CIO, brought to you by Learning Tree International. And now, here's your host, Jason Miller.
My special guest today is Jason Healy, the director of the Cyber Statecraft Initiative for the Atlantic Council. This is a very special edition of Ask the CIO in recognition of Cybersecurity Awareness Month. Jason, thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
Thank you, Jason.
Let's start with some basics. You do cybersecurity research. In fact, you just published a book recently about cyber conflict and one also about cyber policy. Let's discuss those efforts. Give me the sense of what those books are about.
Thanks for asking. Our most recent book we just came out with, we're very excited about. It's the first military history of cyberspace. There are books that talk about cyber policy or that talk about whether or not we're at cyber war or not. But we realized that in Washington, D.C., and when we travel in the world talking about cybersecurity, we're really ignorant about anything that happened more than, say, 2 or 3 years ago.
Now, why are we ignorant about anything that happened more than 2 or 3 years ago? Is that because that's when people really started paying attention to cybersecurity?
No. There's this feeling of that, Jason. I'll be in the Pentagon and having meetings of saying, oh, if people say they were doing cyber prior to 2005, they're full of it. And we have this sense that it's all new because most of us only got into the field in the last couple of years. But actually, we went back in this history book, and we went all the way back to early cyber conflicts of 1986, where you can look at what they went through in 1986, and it would feel familiar to us today. And that's not what we're told, right? We're told, oh, the cyber stuff, it's all new. Forget what happened before. Look forward. But we'd see the experience of these early cyber defenders, and it would feel familiar to the people listening to your show, Jason.
Give me a sense of how that's familiar, because I'll tell you, 1986, so I remember, and this will date me probably as it dates you a little bit, I remember the first email I got was roughly 1989, 1990,
right.
And it was a bunch of numbers and letters, and I was like, what's this? I don't understand. I'll never remember this.
Yeah, right. First, I'm going to give you a quote. Before I get into this 1986, one of the quotes that we uncovered in the book goes like this. Few, if any, contemporary computer security controls can stop a dedicated red team from easily accessing any information sought. So basically saying the red team always gets through. And we just held Cyber Maryland just a couple of weeks ago. If you go to a computer security conference today, if you hire a computer security consultant, they're going to tell that to you today. I'm sure many people have said that on your show. If you hire someone to try and break in, they're going to get in. That quote, Jason, dates to 1979. 1979, it was an Air Force Lieutenant Colonel Roger Shell who did the NSA Rainbow Series on computer security. So for nearly 35 years, we've known that it's easy for red teams to get through. So obviously when you hear someone say, oh, this is all changing, it's all new, it isn't quite true, right? If we can look at these quotes from 35 years ago, and they still make sense to us today. So when we look at this case from 1986, it's called the Cuckoo's Egg, and there was a cyber espionage case where German hackers were breaking into American national labs, defense companies, DOD, and looking for information on Reagan's Star Wars initiative. Remember the Strategic Defense Initiative, the lasers in space?
Sure, sure.
And they traced it back to Germany, and these hackers were selling it to the KGB. And here we are with this cyber espionage case. You know, cyber espionage is the hottest cyber topic in town right now. And I would go to the Pentagon, I'd go to White House, I'd go to other places, and nobody had ever heard of this case. So I went to the Air Force Academy, and if you were in the military, any military, you're expected to know what came before. Army officers now will walk the battlefield at Gettysburg, even though the technology has changed, because they're expected to feel the heritage and imagine what they were doing in that different situation, not out of nostalgia, but so that it will help them in their jobs in the battlefields of Iraq and Afghanistan. What we've done for cybersecurity is we're trying to forget about that stuff that went before. We ignore it. And so what I mean, it's familiar. You could take the guy that was involved in the cyber espionage case named Cliff Stoll, a case called Cuckoo's Egg, and you could look what he did, and you could put him in a cyber espionage case today, and it would feel entirely familiar to him. He had to develop honey nets. We're going to try and keep the hackers in our system so we can trace them back. And he had to painstakingly trace them back hop by hop so he could figure out who was responsible. And that kind of stuff, I think, would be very familiar to today's cyber defenders.
So how were they breaking in to the systems in 1986 when the idea of the internet, the way we think about it, connected systems, was not really there? It was mostly mainframes and your basic computers.
They were connected enough. This wasn't even over the internet. But you know what? The dynamics were still really similar. It was through a system called TimeNet, or TimeNet. And the hackers were coming in through that. But the way that it was routed was still more than similar enough so that the dynamics would be similar today. He had to trace it back step by step so that he could figure out who was responsible. And in the book, we look at these 8 cyber conflicts since 1986 that we think have really been the most significant. Some will be very familiar to our listeners, like Buckshot Yankee, you know, the DoD USB case. Others like Cuckoo's Egg, Solar Sunrise, Eldred Receiver might be less familiar.
Of course, the one that really got us all going on cyber was Titan Rain. Do you guys cover that as well? Because I remember back in the mid-2000s, you say if you weren't involved in cyber before 2005, nothing ever happened. Titan Rain really came about. People started talking about it in 2005, 2006 timeframe.
We saw evidence that it went back even before that. And it helps put it into perspective, right? We were worried about Chinese espionage to the early 2000s, but really it took us to 2011, 8 years, 10 years into the problem before we even started to tell the Chinese that we were upset about it. So I'll tell you, having done a history, it really puts into perspective how we're dealing with cybersecurity today. It seems like we're facing a lot of the same problems as we did decades ago, and it doesn't seem we're making a lot of progress.
Why are we facing the same problems, and why aren't we making progress? I mean, when you do the research for the book, is it just a lack of skills? Is it just things are moving so quickly that you just can't keep up? Did you come to a conclusion in the book?
There are a number of reasons. Some of them we focus more on in the book. When you said, why aren't we learning these lessons before, or you know, why do we feel it's so new, is because people tend to move on. You know, especially in the military, but also in federal government, someone might have 2 or 3 years. They learn these hard lessons. They have their cyber wake-up call. And then they float on to another job. Someone else comes in that hasn't been through that experience. They go through their own wake-up call. They float on to another job. So we see this process of new wave of leaders comes in and then has to go through this. So that's one. Two, I think of course, cybersecurity is a very technical issue. But in some ways, I think we're getting it too technical in a number of ways. One, and if you notice, my book was on cyber conflict. We weren't talking specifically about cybersecurity. And a lot of our problems are actually more tractable if we treat them as national security problems. At the technical level, attacks are speed of light. They're difficult to trace back. They're difficult to provide warning for. Cyber deterrence is considered to be nearly impossible. If we look at these things as conflicts, we find that none of those things need to be true, that the more strategically significant a cyber conflict, the more similar it is to conflict in the air, land, and sea. They're not speed of light. They take place over weeks, months, and years. They tend to be easy to warn because they take place within an existing geopolitical rivalry in the real world. Deterrence appears to be working. So one reason we felt we're not learning is we kind of have the wrong mindset. Last, I think we tend to be very technical in how we face this, in that we're always looking down the wire looking for the bad ones and zeros. And we can be focused more on doing things at scale. And that's really some of the research that we're starting to look at now based on these lessons from the history.
All right, this is just fascinating. But we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll delve more into the book and maybe into the other one you wrote about policy. You're listening to a special edition of Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Jason Healy, the director of the Cyber Statecraft Initiative at the Atlantic Council.
Get empowered with the IT skills you need to improve performance and help your agency achieve its goals. LearningTree International is the number one provider of IT classroom training to the federal government. LearningTree is on GSA IT 70 and MOBIS 874 schedules, which means all levels of the government and qualified contractors get the best tuition savings possible. Save even more with LearningTree's 50% off select IT and management courses each week. Simply visit their website today at learningtree.com/CIO. And even better news for the Beltways, save on travel costs and commuting time by attending live, hands-on, instructor-led courses at one of 10 LearningTree centers, conveniently located around the Washington area in Columbia Fulton, Manassas, Stafford Quantico, D.C. Metro Center, and more. Helping you achieve your agency's mission is LearningTree's number one priority. Act now to get 50% tuition savings. Go to learningtree.com/CIO. That's learningtree.com/CIO.
Welcome back. You're listening to a special edition of Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Jason Healy, the director of the Cyber Statecraft Initiative for the Atlantic Council. This is a special edition of Ask the CIO in recognition of National Cybersecurity Awareness Month. Now, Jason, before break, we were talking about your book, Looking at Cyber Conflict from 1986 to 2012. One thing about that, as you were describing it, is what's the reaction been by DOD and others in the cyberspace?
I think it's mixed. The book is starting to get used in classrooms. So West Point is starting to use it, Georgetown, George Washington, a few others. And I think a lot of parts of the military are enjoying being able to read this like any other kind of military history. And we've been telling people for so long cyber is different, and coming with a message and saying, no, it's actually more similar than we believe. It resonates. It tends to be readable. We tried to write it just like we were writing about the history of World War II or Vietnam or Iraq or Afghanistan. On the other hand, we are using this historical perspective of looking this not just as a series of technical events, but looking at it as real cyber conflict. It kind of upsets the apple cart in a lot of the ways that military doctrine is shaped right now. And in that, I'm not sure it's been quite as welcome.
One thing occurred to me as you're going through it is, how much research did you have to do, and how willing were people to talk about these conflicts? Because I remember, again, going back to 2005, 2006 timeframe, when the publication I worked at did a story about Titan Rain, the DOD was only just getting used to talking about cyber conflict then. And even now, here we are six, 7 years later, they're still not as comfortable.
Yeah. We've certainly seen on some of the issues like Titan Rain that we had to use the information that has already kind of come out on it. I mean, fortunately, we didn't do specifically Titan Rain. We did that broader into Chinese espionage. So instead of having to worry about people talking about classified topics, we could look at the broader range that we know about cyber espionage, including reports from Mandiant and Dmitry Alperovich when he was at McAfee and other places, and tell the broader story. So that's worked fine. But it's also really struck us. We used to talk a lot more about offense in the earlier days. I got involved in 1998 doing offense and defense for the military, and you could talk about offense and espionage in much more open ways. And it's really been probably about 2005 that we really saw kind of a clampdown on the kinds of things that we talked about anything. And it's too bad. I think it's bouncing back at the United States now.
Good segue into your other book around cyber policy. Just give me a quick update on what that one's about. This is a few years old now, right?
Yeah. And it was a great project. Worked with a few other co-authors that some of your listeners might know, like Joe Weiss, Mark Sachs, Jennifer Bayek, all leaders in their fields. And we wanted to try and come down. When we talk about cybersecurity policy, it means all sorts of different things. It can mean, what do we think about internet governance, or what do we think about cyber conflict and national security policy? But of course, it also means what happens within a particular company. So we wanted to come up with a catalog that looks at all of these things that we mean by cyber policy. So it's got over 100 pages of just going through and what are all of these different cyber policies and talking about the upsides and downsides within the catalog of the different policies that you might have.
And the idea is to help people understand what's out there, what are the best practices, and then apply them?
Yeah, and especially for, you know, both for corporate, but also so that when people are coming up through universities, that the professor can be able to teach, here's what's kind of going on within policies in the corporate world right now, and talk about the pros and cons of those different policies. So really show what the range of these are. I mean, we can show the spectrum of the kinds of things involved in cyber policy.
All right, so two very interesting books, one on cyber policy, one on cyber conflict. What are you working on next? What is your next areas of research, or what's exciting you right now around cybersecurity?
Well, we're doing work in two particular areas right now. And the first is we want to walk through what we think winning means. And when we talk about cybersecurity, what's our end goal? And to me, the end goal is we have to get defense better than offense. We still have the same problems as we had then. The attackers always have an advantage over the defenders. And I don't think it has to be that way. In almost all other kinds of human conflict, the advantage between the attacker and defender changes all the time, right? There's a time when guys chasing around on their swords would win the battle, and then we invented machine guns. And then it had shifted, and then the defenders had the advantage, and then we came along with tanks and aircraft, and it shifted again. So I'm hopeful that the position that we're in today in cyberspace, where the attackers have the advantage, we can flip that. I think that's the only real goal that we can have in cybersecurity, certainly at the level of national policy, is to let's do everything we can to give the defenders the advantage in cyberspace rather than the attackers.
But isn't that just the way life works? I mean, you described it with, you know, first you had swords and then you had bow and arrows and mm-hmm. then you had, you know, guns and then there was, you know, machine guns. Isn't it always that the attackers always have the advantage? I mean, can a defender ever have the advantage over an attacker?
Well, I mean, you do in the other areas, right? In World War I, defense had the advantage. I want to get us to that point. And certainly we're never going to get defense having the advantage if we just give up on it as a goal. And unfortunately, I get this feeling in D.C. sometimes that we just don't think it's ever going to happen, and therefore we don't have to think about it. If you want defense better than offense, you need to work at scale to a large degree. It's tough to get defense better than offense if you're working at the endpoint. So thinking about, if you think about that as a goal, you can say, all right, what are the ways that we can put in X amount of effort and really get 100 or 1,000 times X effort on coming out? You know, it means you got to really be able to work at scale. And so I think a lot of our cyber policies right now really aren't working at scale. You know, we're saying, good, let's work, for example, at DHS, and we'll work one company at a time. And that's never going to get us to the point where we're ahead of this.
But I think at the same time, you do have these initiatives like information sharing or the ISACs or something that is looking at scale. But are you talking about even a scale bigger than, you know, 40 companies? For instance, the Defense Industrial Base pilot that DOD ran now is over at DHS. That was in some ways a small scale, but you were thinking it's got to be even bigger scale than that.
Right. I mean, and I think that implies that it's going to mean doing things at ISPs, other places. You know, you've got these critical nodes you can get through. This is one of the things that I like about the NIST standards. I mean, that's one. If we can get something like that, maybe that'll help. But as an example, if I were at DHS right now, if I were advising the new Deputy Undersecretary, Phyllis Schneck, there, I would advise that we largely pull back talking to individual companies and we start doing things that are going to help at scale. Things like the SEC guidance. You know, if you've had a significant incident, you have to report it. I would also even go to companies like institutional investors. If we think as a government that companies are making bad risk decisions, the government doesn't have to get involved in that. The shareholders should be told. And institutional investors like California Pension System already go to all these companies and say, we think you're making bad decisions here. That's one way that you can work at scale. Rather than talking to 100 companies, you talk to one that has stocks in 100 and let them help you make the case.
It's a fascinating concept, but why do you think then people are looking at the smaller scales?
Two things. One is the way we've always done it. It's what I call this American consensus cybersecurity strategy, that you have these eight things, or however many, you know, you got to patch, you got to do international affair outreach, and we say, here's the eight things, and we don't particularly prioritize between them, and you just go do them. And again, we just did this history, and we see the problems have stayed the same. We are not getting better than the defense here, and unless we get better than the defense, we're going to be having a program just like this, Jason, in 20 years, and we're going to look back and wonder why we haven't made any progress. The second reason, I don't think we've had the goal. Defense is going to be better than offense. The other reason I don't think we're making a lot of progress, especially if you're looking at U.S. national strategy in this for cybersecurity, is that we keep thinking in these strategies that the government matters. And this really came across in the cyber conflict history book we did, Jason, that if you look at these big cyber conflicts that have been fought, almost none of them have been decisively resolved by governments. Again and again, it's the private sector that are the ones that decisively resolve the conflict. But if you look at our policies, they all say, private sector, you figure out the problem, or you let us government know, we'll escalate it up to the right people, and we'll inform you of the decisions and actions. That's not the way that this gets fixed, right? I'm sorry to use a military analogy here, we've got to look at the private sector as the supported command, not the supporting command.
Interesting. And I think that is a total different perspective. And I think you're going to, you know, as you said, upset the apple cart a little bit. Let's take a quick break. We come back, we'll talk a little bit more about upsetting the apple cart. You're listening to a special edition of Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Jason Healy, the director of the Cyber Statecraft Initiative for the Atlantic Council.
Get empowered with the IT skills you need to improve performance and help your agency achieve its goals. LearningTree International is the number one provider of IT classroom training to the federal government. LearningTree is on GSA IT 70 and MOBUS 874 schedules, which means all levels of the government and qualified contractors get the best tuition savings possible. Save even more with LearningTree's 50% off select IT and management courses each week. Simply visit their website today at learningtree.com/CIO. And even better news for the Beltways, save on travel costs and commuting time by attending live, hands-on, instructor-led courses at one of 10 LearningTree centers, conveniently located around the Washington area in Columbia, Fulton, Manassas, Stafford, Quantico, D.C. Metro Center, and more. Helping you achieve your agency's mission is LearningTree's number one priority. Act now to get 50% tuition savings. Go to learningtree.com/CIO. That's learningtree.com/CIO.
Welcome back. You're listening to a special edition of Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In recognition of National Cybersecurity Awareness Month, my special guest is Jason Healy, the director of the Cyber Statecraft Initiative for the Atlantic Council. Now, Jason, before break, we're talking a lot about the idea of turning information sharing in many ways on its head, where it's not the industry tells the government and the government comes back and says, yeah, we got it, we'll tell you what to do, but almost the opposite of that. Now, you spent some time as the vice chairman of the Financial Services ISAC, the Information Sharing Analysis Center. Did that kind of give you some insight in terms of why this model that the government and industry is using now really needs to be turned on its head?
And this has given me a pretty different perspective than I think a lot of the other people that have been involved in some of the same positions. You know, I had been White House and Department of Defense. And being government gives you a very government-centric view of how things need to get fixed. Having been both with one of the main banks, Goldman Sachs, as well as the Financial Services ISAC, you know, this leading information sharing organization, really let you see that it's the companies that are in the front lines. And the best sharing tends to happen between companies in the same sector. And to a large degree, you don't have to have government get involved in that.
Now, the government doesn't have to get involved because it's going in between the same sectors. But at the same time, if you're seeing something in the financial sector, you're also going to see it in the telecom or in the energy sector as well. And that's where the government's got to play the role.
Well, I mean, I think the ISACs do a pretty good job of sharing amongst each other. And even when they don't, if they're not sharing, that doesn't mean you necessarily have to get the government involved. Actually, it reminds me of something. I got to hear General Keith Alexander talking about this topic at a conference, and he gave the analogy of a red Lamborghini. He said, imagine the world's networks are all highways. Now, the government doesn't need to know about all the cars on all of those highways, but imagine that there's a red Lamborghini that represents a really bad attack. He said, you know, look, us at Cyber Command, we don't care about all the other cars. We just need to know where the red Lamborghini is so that we can stop it. And he asked for the help from the audience to let him know. But think about that. Why does the United States government need to know where the red Lamborghini is? If the red Lambo is an attack, if AT&T knows where it is, AT&T can stop it themselves. Or AT&T can tell Verizon or Deutsche Telekom or NTT Docomo to stop this car. You don't have to get the United States government, much less Signals Intelligence Agency, involved with stopping the car. We've so fetishized the topic of information sharing, we've lost sight of what decisions and actions need to get taken to get the right things done. And overwhelmingly, those actions and decisions are in the private sector. So I would like to switch a lot of the government's public-private sector partnership ideas into saying, what can we do to make the private sector better? When I was at FSISAC, we weren't quite failing, but we weren't succeeding as well as we might. And we got 2003, and we got a $2 million grant from Treasury so that we wouldn't just give our warnings to the 50 paying members, largely Wall Street, New York banks, but we would give them to all 13,000 banks, including every federal credit union and mom-and-pop banks. That $2 million is one of the best spent bits of money that the U.S. government ever did. What's our traditional way? The traditional mindset is government has to do this. So they would, nowadays, we would take that $2 million and we'd give it to DHS or we'd give it to Fort Meade. We would hire some GS for it and we'd give the rest to a contractor. So if we shift our mindset to having a private sector-centric mindset for solving these problems, I think we might now finally start getting ahead of where we've been.
But I guess the argument from General Alexander's and a lot of people on DHS's side is the telecoms haven't been stopping it because the attacks have been coming into the federal networks, because the federal networks, you know, 85% of all federal traffic rides on these public networks. So there are problems that aren't being solved by the private sector. So therefore, can you really depend on the private sector to solve it?
Yes and no. Some parts of the private sector are excellent. Just up this week talking to some of the banks, and they've got more advanced intelligence and defense operations than I've seen anywhere in the United States government. I mean, just phenomenal. Other parts are doing what they ought to. But I'm not convinced if they're not doing what they ought that the government is going to be the right answer, especially, you know, this month of all months, to say that the government is going to come in and save us is, I think, the shutdown has shown the kind of folly of expecting that the government is going to be able to do this. So, but if the private sector isn't doing what they ought to, I would do two things. One, I'd find those parts that are working and help them do better. A lot of these groups that are making the biggest difference, it's people doing this as a side job. And just like we saved the Financial Services ISAC with a $2 million grant, a lot of these groups with $100,000, $500,000 could really start improving a lot of the security to clamp down on these attacks, without having to argue about authorities, without having to argue about Title 10 or Title 50 or any of the other things that ties D.C. up in knots. Second, if the private sector isn't making the correct risk decisions, we don't necessarily need government to tell them they're making the bad risk decisions. They have a board and they have shareholders that are there to enforce that stuff. So for American companies, we could carve out this whole section of publicly traded companies and say, we've got existing governance mechanisms that we could improve these companies with, namely SEC guidance and other things, and we don't have to have a new Department of Homeland Security get involved in issue standards. So I just don't feel like we're working at scale or using the governance mechanisms that the private sector has itself.
You've give us a lot to think about, and we could probably talk for a little bit longer, but unfortunately, we are out of time. You've been listening to a special edition of Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In recognition of National Cybersecurity Awareness Month, my special guest was Jason Healy, the Director of Cyber Statecraft Initiative at the Atlantic Council. Jason, fascinating conversation, and we'll definitely have a link to your book on federalnewsradio.com. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
Thank you very much, Jay.
Thank you for listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. This show has been brought to you by Learning Tree International. If you missed any portion of this show, you can hear it in its entirety on demand at federalnewsradio.com.